WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. When you think of adoptions, you usually think of the child losing all connection to the birth parents. Well, now there's a growing movement where adoptive parents try to keep close ties with the child's biological mother and father. It's called open adoption, and its proponents say it offers a better life for the child. So why is this open approach better than the privacy usually associated with adoptions? Joining me now to look at this are two guests. Dawn Smith-Pliner is the founder and director of an organization called Friends in Adoption, which advocates the open adoption model. Also joining us is Ann Powers, who you may know is the music critic for the LA Times. She adopted a baby this way, and she maintains a relationship with the child's birth mother. Welcome to WNYC, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Dawn, exactly how does an open adoption differ from a traditional adoption?
In an open adoption, there's typically a plan from the start that enables the biological family and the adoptive family and the child to stay in contact with one another over time, as opposed to a traditional adoption, which most often means that there will be little or no contact between the adoptive family and the birth family and the child over time.
Is it supposed to have benefits more for the birth mother or the adoptive parent?
Hopefully for everyone, and most importantly, the child.
Just logically, it strikes me as counterintuitive, and that might be true for some of our listeners as well. If you're putting up your child for adoption, and it could be God knows what trauma or difficult circumstances that caused it, wouldn't you expect the birth parents to want to sort of fade into the background?
No, not necessarily. I think that when a woman or a couple makes an adoption plan for their baby or for the child, they do it, one, out of love, and two, out of care and concern. So their peace of mind, I think, oftentimes comes from knowing the child over time, as opposed to making a plan and then, you know, basically saying, well, that's a good plan. Now I'm going to live my life as I would normally and carry on. The one thing I learned over 25 years as an adoptive mom and director of an agency is that, you know, people don't forget. They care a great deal about their children, whether they parent daily or whether they parent through adoption.
The lawyer in me suggests that there might be a liability question lurking somewhere in the background. Were there issues with agencies being sued by children wanting to find out who their birth parents were?
I believe there might have been something of that line in Texas. To my knowledge, well, first of all, we've not seen it through Friends in Adoption, and to my knowledge, I've not seen other agencies grappling with that issue. So I really can't respond other than, you know, by maybe third party remembering of something like that in Texas happening.
Well, let me bring in Ann Powers. Hi. Yeah, you wanted to add something to that?
Oh, I just wanted to say that I'll just bring myself in. One thing is that the open adoption model, which has existed for over 20 years now, coincided with a lot of adopted children and birth families, especially birth moms, seeking out reunion. So there has been a movement all across America for records to be unsealed and for contact to be made. So it was happening anyway. You know what I mean? To me, it's the truth wants to be told. You know, so there was a dual movement. Agencies were starting to exist where open adoption could happen, but also people were doing it informally, which is of course how adoption was before it became institutionalized. Kinship adoption was often open, you know, village adoption was often open. So it's, to me, a very natural way to do it.
Tell us about your experience adopting a child from a 16-year-old mother. Did she want open adoption as much as you did?
Oh, absolutely. We adopted through an agency in the Pacific Northwest, Open Adoption and Family Services, and Mallory is the birth mom, Mallory Blaschka, and she had come to the agency after she discovered she was pregnant. She decided she wanted to have the baby, but she didn't want to stop contact after she gave birth, and she also knew she wasn't in a position to parent herself. So we actually met her when she was 7 months pregnant and spent two amazing months getting to know her and her family. I will say the birth father in this case is not in the picture for various reasons that we do keep private, but we're very close with Mallory's family, and in fact Mallory's coming to visit in 2 weeks. She comes about four times a year.
You're listening to 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking about a new approach to adoption where the birth parents stay in touch with the child long after it's born. And we can take calls on this. If you're a parent who has adopted a child, we'd like to hear about your experience. Did you have an open adoption, or were you adopted yourself? And what do you think about this approach? Let us know at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our website at WNYC.org. You click on the Brian Lehrer Show. And you write about the anxiety you experienced in the weeks before the birth, where you could never be sure that the adoption would go through until 48 hours after the birth and so forth. Is that affected by the vagaries of the open adoption?
Well, I think in some ways it's more tangible because there's an actual person, not a specter or an imagined person that you are dealing with every day. However, for us anyway, we had such a great experience, and I know families that have had more sort of difficult experiences. But for us, Mallory and her family were very reassuring to us, and I could see her. I think the hardest thing was really right around the time of our daughter's birth, Rebecca's birth, seeing her go through the grief and serious anguish that she went through in entrusting Rebecca to us. That was very painful for all of us. And also just during the first year of Rebecca's life, kind of figuring out what it means to be an adoptive mom and what it means to be a birth mom and how those roles connect to each other. Because we really fetishize motherhood in our culture. And we, you know, the idea of mom as supreme being, even though it's also mom as you know, kind of workhorse, those things go hand in hand. And I think it's hard to accept the role of one of two. It feels very unusual. But Rebecca does have two moms, so it's very normal for her.
I can tell you a funny story about that, too, in terms of Aura, our daughter, was 16, and her mother, Joyce, her birth mother, Joyce, the three of us were in a store, and Aura was one of these kids who had purple, green, yellow hair, and I do have for my children to talk about their adoptions. So here we are in a store, and Aura wanted to buy hair color. So here are two moms, one daughter, you know, looking at each other saying, oh, my gosh, what color is it going to be today, and who's going to pay? And a part of me as a mom felt that little twinge. A part of me said, isn't it cool that a 16-year-old has two moms who care, would do anything in the world for her? So that's one thought. Another thought I had about that is that from my observation, what I've seen is that if you know the biological parents before or prior to the birth of the child, then if the biological mom and dad decides to parent, then as much pain as you might feel as an adoptive mom to be or adoptive dad to be, you also, I think, experience a level of comfort knowing the child staying within the biological family is going to be loved as if you were going to love the child in the adoptive family. So I think there's peace of mind that comes along with all the other emotions when a plan is made.
That's very interesting.
We have a call from Andrea in Maplewood. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I'm 44, as I told your screener, and I'm adopted. And I think it's a great idea to have open adoption because I'm 44, I'm married, I have three kids of my own. But I'm looking right on my dining room table at all my search papers because I'm trying to find my mother to help my kids with their medical, you know, so they'll know their medical background. But I also think it's part of the consciousness of being a human being is knowing who you are and where you're from. I mean, that's know thyself.
Why do you have papers all over your table? What are the difficulties in finding?
Well, because I was adopted in New York, which has some of the strictest and most closed rules. So I can't get into those records.
As far as you know, does the agency that oversaw the adoption, do they know and are not telling you, or do they just not have the records?
Well, they...
Oh, it's legally, right? Legally, you can't. They can't tell you, right?
Yeah, they can't tell me. And, I mean, it's just... Yeah, I would have to hire a lawyer, petition the court. It's a very expensive process. But, I mean, the main thing is I shouldn't have to, I mean, I had a dog that I got from a shelter, and I had more knowledge of his background than I have about my own. I mean, that's not right.
That's just sad. And my daughter looks a lot like her birth mom, and it's really cool that she can look at her birth mom and see, you know, her eyes and her expression and her hair. And, you know, then she has some of my speech patterns and some of my, you know, little tics or whatever. So and some of my husband's as well. And so it's good that she can look and see where, you know, where she came from, as you're saying.
Yeah.
We're talking with Dawn Smith-Pliner, the founder and director of an organization called Friends in Adoption, and with Ann Powers of the L.A. Times, a music critic who adopted a baby that way. We're also taking your calls at 433-9692. Jeffrey from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. We are the fathers of a boy who we adopted through Dawn's agency. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Jeffrey.
AJ just turned one on Saturday, and it's an open adoption. And a couple weeks ago, we actually took AJ out to New Jersey, his birth home, and we had lunch with his adoptive mom, Danielle. And
his birth mom.
We couldn't imagine doing it another way.
You know, I'm glad you called, because I feel like one thing. When I was younger, before I chose to be a parent, I was always very much a proud bohemian, and I have a lot of gay friends and feel very connected to, you know, gay liberation and that whole culture. And we love the fact that this has been like our agency, there's a lot of gay couples who adopt through our agency. And it's just an example of how different kinds of people are building different families, you know. It's wonderful how families changing, and I think that's really important.
A couple things about our adoption. First off, you know, with an open adoption, the birth mother sort of chooses you. She sort of, Danielle, had our profile, so she knew up front. She picked my partner and I, so she knew she was getting two dads for her child. And she wanted it that way. That was her choice. And I don't know if Dawn can corroborate on this, but there seems to be a slight growing tendency for some, especially young birth moms, to want two dads. Who knows why? I don't know. Maybe they want to be the only mother. But she was very clear about that. Second, about our adoption, Danielle, our son's birth mom, she was adopted herself, as was the birth father.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that call, Jeffrey. That sounds like an argument for this evolution. I think there are some other views out there, though, and I have Karen from Manhattan. Karen, good morning.
Morning. I gave up in the 60s two children at different times to adoptions, and open adoptions were not available. Had I known they were available, I would have gone and cherry-picked, but in a manner of speaking. But the younger son found me and contacted me some years later, and I discovered, from what he told me, that actually it had been into a kind of crummy family. They didn't do right by him, and they didn't take care of his medical needs. Had it been, no question, I would not have been an appropriate and a decent full-time parent. I was way too young and way too immature. But I think that the child had access to a wider population of people to care for him, would have gotten some more appropriate medical care and possibly nurturing and guidance than he did receive.
Karen, was your adoption in New York?
Let me see. No, one was in New Jersey, one was in Philadelphia.
And your son had to go through some effort to find you, I imagine?
Well, they were private adoptions. So they weren't gone through agencies, because my own, in those days, they tried to match you. If you went through official agencies, they tried to match your religious background. And my religious background was so peculiar that I didn't think that there was a hope that either of them would ever get placed. So So they were private adoptions, and there was a certain amount of information trail available to him. Did they care to share it with him? And I guess they did, that he could locate me by name. And that's what happened.
Thank you so much for that call, Karen. I've got one other comment, and I wanted to get a reaction from both of you, Dawn and Anne. This is an email that was sent to us, and the listener says, "Sounds like a great idea for the biological parent. They get to give up all the financial and emotional responsibility to the adoptive parent and not have to worry about it. They have your cake and eat it too," is what they say. And it was a comment from our website, actually. What do you think,
Don? You want to take that one first?
I'll go with that one. And I think if you think about adoption and the purpose of adoption, then from my perspective, it should be a woman or a couple wanting, for in a well-educated way, to make a plan for a baby or a child they feel unable, for whatever reasons, to parent. Period. And for the adoptive individual, couple, or family, it should be they want to adopt to be able to provide a secure, loving home for a child for life. And if that's a true statement, then there's no conflict in that. It means that all parties should be working together for the same end, a healthy child in a healthy family. And kind of piggybacking onto what Anne was saying, and is that, you know, secrets don't do well. So no matter how loud the voices between the adoptive family and the biological family, silent or vocal, it should be a voice that is respected so the child can gain the benefits of all the families, the biological family and the adoptive family.
That will be where we have to leave it. We ran out of time, but I'd like to thank my guests, Dawn Smith-Pliner, founder and director of Friends in Adoption, and Ann Powers, the music critic for the LA Times. Thanks so much for coming on.